high short kick that is going to come up and bounce at the 20. Rutgers has a chance to recover it, and they do! What a play by the Scarlet Knights!
Get it to Harper with three, with two, with one. Harper for the win! Got it!
10 and 10 at the 21. Wimsett hands it off. It's Manunga getting to the corner left. 20, 15, catching to 10. Manunga down near the goal line. He is in! Touchdown, Rutgers!
Now with six. Baker making his move with five. Step back three for the lead. Oh. Yeah! With 1.1 to go.
All right, Rutgers football back in action. The 2024 spring camp has begun on Tuesday, March 26th. Greg Schiano met with the media on Tuesday to address the offseason and the current state of the team. Back with us, David Anderson, to discuss what was some of the news that came out today about the team and just some thoughts that we have on this team heading now into a crucial spring camp in 2024. Some of the announcements that Greg Schiano made, three medical retirements, Jacob Allen, former four-star, the top recruit from New Jersey, that came out yesterday from Chris Eisman, but Schiano confirmed it. Also, former five-star long snapper Jake Eldridge, as well as Joe DeCotri, have medically retired. He did indicate a key injury to Tyreem Powell, starting linebacker, has torn his Achilles, in addition to having a season-ending injury to his wrist last fall. We can get into that one a little bit. Also confirmed that Tyler Needham and Chris Long, who had season-ending injuries, are a full go for spring camp. And then there were quite a bit of positional changes. Thomas Omonkwa has moved to wide receiver from safety. Receivers Jesse Ofuri and Vale Nakun have moved from wide receiver to defensive back. Isaiah Crumpler, who's an intriguing wide receiver from North Carolina, who's, you know, in the 24 high school class, has been moved to defensive back. And also, another one was Flynn Appleby, punter, had a relatively good year. Not great, but solid. He has left the program. He decided he didn't want to play football anymore. Michael Hartshorn is the lone punter at the moment. He's a walk-on. Schiano did say they're actively recruiting the position. I might have missed a few other things, but let's kick it off there. David, just any initial thoughts on some of the news that Schiano revealed on Tuesday?
First of all, I'm shocked at how the program did not let this Tyreem Powell injury out sooner. I mean, that is like DEFCON 5 level secrecy for not only a guy who's a high-profile player who we thought might already have been better off going to the NFL, but he's just a big dude, like, that nobody reported that this was happening, just seeing him walking around, I would have thought. So I guess A-plus for the program, just keeping things in-house. Everyone, clearly that means everyone's rowing in the same direction for news like that not to come out. Now, how does it actually impact them? I mean, there should be enough time for him to rehab himself and get back to close to full strength for training camp, maybe week one, even if it drags out a few weeks after that. I mean, I guess I think he can still play linebacker at the Big Ten level, even if he's not quite as explosive. But that does mean that somebody's going to have to step up at linebacker. And all the talk we've had about how that you want to use Mo Touré as something other than just your standard linebacker. Well, they've basically got a little about more than 5 months to determine if someone else is ready to take that spot, or do you have to just play Touré at linebacker, which is not ideal. That gives you less options. But, I mean, definitely the Powell news is very surprising that something this serious is just coming up now. I mean, is that how you thought about it?
So interesting because, and if you listen or watch this podcast, you know that I, and I think you are big fans of Kenny Fletcher, and he has remained at tight end after switching there before the bowl game. He is sticking to tight end. So that is interesting in the sense of, you know, he had potentially an opportunity to step up in Powell's absence. I think it's twofold. They think highly, they need help at tight end. And I think, you know, Fletcher is athletic and they feel like he can help him there. But then, yes, to your greater point, I think there must be hope that they do have enough depth and enough potential there for someone to emerge. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I think you're right. You know, in terms of Powell, it doesn't necessarily matter when he returns, as long as he is, you know, fully healed to be able to go. Because I do think, although maybe the timeline is the same Shiano reference, you know, it's the same recovery timeline that he was already dealing with the wrist. But obviously having that Achilles, you know, is he going to have that same burst? How long is it potentially going to, you know, be for him to kind of really shake off the rust? It's a big question mark, I think, for a defense that we all hope takes the next step. He's obviously a crucial cog to it. So that was certainly, I think, you know, Shiano, for obvious reasons, you know, is being pretty general about it right now, but that's certainly a storyline that, you know, we're going to pay a lot of attention to.
Yeah. And I mean, now you have basically a month before they have to evaluate, do we need to bring another linebacker in via the transfer portal? And if the answer is yes, then likely you're going to be selling them on more snaps than they would have gotten otherwise. You know, if you don't think Powell's going to be ready to go, or more so if you say, hey, Mo Ture is playing defensive end for us. I'm not saying that's what they would decide, but I'm saying hypothetically, if that's the route that they chose to go, that's the messaging to said player if they were to come in. I think the key thing that you mentioned, though, is really, I mean, we're saying we want the defense to take the next step, but really the bigger thing is we got to make sure that they don't regress at all. And losing Tyrene Powell, even if everybody else is back, I mean, that unless other people step up, there is a chance that Stephens could regress. Like, I think we're counting our chickens a lot because most of the personnel is back, but sometimes things happen or you play different types of offenses and you're just not as good as you were the year before. So, you know, hopefully Powell comes back. Hopefully this is an opportunity for other guys to kind of get more experience in spring practice, in summer training camp. Then at the end of the day, you end up even better than you were before with more guys with experience. That's the hope.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think obviously that'll just be something to watch during spring camp. Who steps up? Who gets the reps also? But yeah, it's not the end of the world. He wasn't going to be a full participant anyway because of his wrist. But I think it's, for me, it's more of just how is he going to be able to recover? Not just, you know, meeting that timeline at the start of the season, but also, you know, how much can he fully, you know, get back to his old self? I think that's a key question. Other things we wanted to touch on, obviously a lot of positional switches. Wide receiver is one that, you know, had a lot of guys coming and going. What are your kind of initial thoughts in terms of that position group?
So I think when we talk about wide receiver, when we look back at the last decade roughly of Rutgers football, I mean, wide receivers for a good portion of the time, we just needed them to be running basic routes correctly and catching the ball when thrown to them. That sounds like an extremely low bar, but there were plenty of times that we saw, especially, you know, 2 years ago, especially in like the 2018, 2019 seasons, where that just wasn't happening. I think that at this point, Shiano sees that, okay, we've built the room to a point that we're getting credible play from enough guys that what are we trying to do? We're trying to add another element to that, another level of either playmaking or game-breaking ability, something else. You want to add on top of, like, we've reached the baseline of what's required, trying to do more. And when I look at Thomas Amonkwa, he reminded me a lot of Chris Long, who also started on the defensive side at Rutgers, is now listed as a full participant. But 2 years ago, Long was one of those guys who could take a ball that wasn't perfectly thrown and not only catch it, but turn on some yards afterward. He had that huge play against Michigan that we talk about. And I think that Amonkwa never projected to me as like an elite defensive back, for example, but he is someone who might be able to offer you a little extra oomph in the pass game as a receiver catching the ball. And so I think, not saying that move was inevitable, but I think it's a good sign to see that from a guy like him. On the flip side, we got some guys who are going the other direction. I mean, Jesse O'Fury surprised me a little bit, but when you more I thought about that after we got that news, it's like you have Ian Strong, you have Fama Toure. So in terms of like bigger bodied receivers, you're pretty much saying, okay, which of these are our bigger body receivers are the guys we're going to go with? And if O'Fury's not in the, if he's not ahead of them, then you say to yourself, okay, maybe this guy can come in and be like a big hitter as a safety or something like that. I mean, if the reverse was true and O'Fury was ahead of Ian Strong on the depth chart, then we'd probably see the same, like with Strong playing safety or linebacker or whatever. So I think that those moves, crossing the ball from offensive, especially receiver to DB, I think those are healthy moves for a program. And the thing to keep in mind, which is, I think, correct on behalf of Shiano as a philosophy going back many years, is the first year you're just trying to get acclimated to college football. Later, as time goes on, if a fit is a better for a player or more, or best cases, it's good for the player and the team. But if it makes more sense for a particular player to switch sides of the ball later on, great. So, I mean, I think it's healthy when these changes are happening, especially when you're seeing it in a time where Rutgers has starters at safety. So you're not just hoping that like Jesse O'Fury is going to move and like be a starting safety immediately. Like this is, we're not in a desperate situation like that. And so I think those are mostly healthy when you talk about positional moves at DB and wide receiver. Was that kind of how you read it in general or specific to any guys that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, because I think it's a great point, because I think the moves are being made out of depth, both, you know, positions of strength that they have, where they have guys that have a lot of years left that they can transition to another spot, not out of necessity that they're automatically going to be in the two deep, which we've seen in the past. Right. So that, I think, is a huge difference. And obviously it does show that the program's made progress in improving the talent depth. And I think also just, you know, in terms of the athleticism and the speed on the roster now is better. So making some of these moves actually does make sense in terms of what they have. I think Crumpler's an interesting one simply because, you know, of his family legacy at the position and a wide receiver, tight end, but also, you know, just being on campus, a month and a half now, already changing positions. But it's great that, you know, obviously he's willing to do that. So it's it certainly makes a kind of another added element to spring to watch for. Wanted to transition now to offensive line. We know that Tyler Needham is a full go. Shiano said, obviously lost to Croce to medical retirement. Any kind of initial thoughts on the offensive line now going into spring camp?
Well, much like we talked about with the other positions, you're not in a desperate situation. Needham showed a lot in the first couple games as a starter. I mean, looking back, love Reggie Sutton, but I definitely saw more. I felt better about what Tyler Needham was giving them when he was playing than everyone who came in after he was injured. So do I think that necessarily means he'll be the starter this year? No, because in a perfect world, somebody will get even better and pass him on the depth chart with the work that they've been able to do and improve. But you feel like even if Tyler Needham's 85%, I mean, you should be able to get the kind of guy who was blocking in those early season games. And you felt like, okay, right tackle isn't a position of weakness per se on the squad. Now, Reggie Sutton, who knows how much mobility he'll have back. Again, I'm relatively bearish compared to some people about Sutton because, I mean, these guys are big, the linemen. And so to lose that mobility, especially now that teams are going to have whatever it is, 8 games on tape of him and like what he can and can't do, that concerns me a lot more. I know, you know, Rutgers held up fine against Miami in the bowl game, but I feel like we need to see steps from the offensive line. Like if you're not moving forward, you're moving backward on the offensive line. And hopefully that this just gives them more pieces on the line, especially with, to your point, medical retirements. Now in that class that had 7 offensive linemen, we've got 3 who have had to medically retire, including former number one recruit in the state, Jacob Allen, Nelson Monegro, and now Dodo DeCroach, all of which were, you know, big, strong guys that projected as like Big Ten, at least two deepers. So the fact that now that group class is down to four, you got four in the class below, which includes Rivera, who a lot of people are high on. I mean, we need somebody from that class. And Kobe Asamoah has been the lead so far. But somebody from that class is going to have to become a reliable starter for this team. I don't know if it's this year or next year, but like right now they're kind of patching it together. You got only one more year of Holland Pierce, theoretically, right? Felter is running out of eligibility. So, I mean, we need somebody from that class to step up unless the class below them ends up with like 75% hit rate in terms of starting guys, which, you know, maybe, you know, Josiah Peterson or someone like that. But, I mean, this spring practice is probably more important for offensive linemen than anybody else. And I can tell you that because, like, when I played, there were the guys who, like, in 7-on-7, they don't really get any work. Like, defensive linemen can get a little bit. Like, you can do a little bit of practice, like pass rush, stuff like that. But offensive line can't get anything, really, unless you're in pads. And you really have no idea what's going on, how ready they are to play until you see them hitting people and working as a unit. So definitely going to be a huge camp for the offensive line, because if the offensive line does not improve, there's only on the margins that the quarterback and receiver play is going to make this group better. And as we've talked about before, unless they improve, it's entirely possible Rutgers doesn't win six games and go to a bowl again. Even if the rest of the team is roughly the same, bad luck, injuries, things like that, we really need the offensive line to take a step forward, and this is their time to do so.
Yeah, it's great, great points. I think, you know, that is also, aside from just this coming season, that's a big challenge, right? Not just with the offensive line, but I think the defense as a whole, where you have so many kind of penciled in starters. And then the next year, you're going to have a lot of guys that are gone. So how do you develop, you know, the younger players behind them, getting them any level of experience while also having so many guys, you know, just entrenched in certain roles. And as you said, spring camp for the offensive line is so critical for that. So that'll be really interesting to watch for. Wanted to go to obviously a huge topic, which is quarterback. Shiano talked about and was asked about bringing in Ethan Calicmanis and just talking about wanting to get more production out of the quarterback position. That's ultimately with Gavin Wimsett, you know, developing and taking a step forward, or if it's Calicmanis, that will be obviously their goal. And he said it very kind of matter-of-factly. I like the way he answered it. And I think, you know, it's all very transparent, you know, in terms of what needs to happen. I guess, what are your initial thoughts? I mean, reports are, you know, Calicmanis was first in drills, although Shiano did talk about how they do the same drill twice with all four quarterbacks. He did touch on A.J. Cerise and Johnny Shepherd as well, with Wimsett and Calicmanis, so that all are kind of going to be doing the same drills, same reps initially. And get a lot of reps. But we talked about it in our last episode when you were here about, you know, kind of unprecedented depth at quarterback for Rutgers, or at least in a long time. Any thoughts on in terms of how to look at this in spring camp?
I mean, first of all, if you're just being honest with yourself, it's makes sense to try to give Ethan Calicmanis some throws to those number one receivers to see how he can do. For two reasons. One, you had a year of Gavin throwing to Christian Dremel and, you know, Ian Strong when he was getting starter reps, for example. So it would be good to see, like, well, what does it look like if Ethan's getting a couple more of those reps? Number one. Number two is that Gavin Wimsett has enough arm strength that it doesn't necessarily matter as much how much separation his receivers are getting. So I'm not sure if it makes that much. I don't know if he's going to look that much better throwing to the number one receivers versus the number two receivers, if that's what's happening. And it sounds like that's not really like what's happening anyway. It sounds like everyone's kind of throwing to everyone, which makes sense, because one of the things that scares me a little bit about the defensive side of the ball, to your point, is that there's too many starters coming back. And we thought that was a good thing in the past. And then, almost like the guys that were second on the depth chart might not have been as motivated, or the coaches weren't giving them enough burn because there was like a little bit of like, let's not get ourselves hurt and just like maintain the status quo. So on the offensive side, to kind of just throw as many curveballs as they can to see who steps up, I really like that. I mean, I think you got to get these quarterbacks as many throws as you can. Not like Junction Boys level, like for any of our viewers who are old enough to remember the actual Junction Boys or at least the series about it. But, I mean, I want to see these guys throwing as much as possible, which leads me to the other point we were talking about offline was like Rutgers in theory should be able to run the ball some. Do you really open it up in spring practice and have them chuck it around in some of these scrimmages just to see what they can do and then dial it back later on? Or is there a steady build like we've seen in the past where we're going to keep doing what we do and just layer on a little more, a little more, a little more? I'm not sure, and it'll be interesting to see how they do it. I mean, these coaches, this is the type of thing we can speculate all we want as fans, but this is what separates some of the really good coaches from kind of your average coach and how they manage these type of situations. But Ethan getting some extra throws in, you know, right off the bat, I also think is good because it probably gives a little more pressure on him and a little more pressure on Gavin. Because if Gavin just came in as a presumptive starter and Ethan's coming in almost with, you know, hey, I'm the number two, whatever, I'm just trying to, you know, be the nice guy. Like, I don't know. I think it's better to kind of like push everybody's buttons, almost like Bill Parcells would do, just to see what happens. So I'm really curious to see what happens with the quarterback play. Again, I'll put that as a number two storyline behind the offensive line play, but as how important it is. But it's definitely obviously the big storyline. And then, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, you have to be looking at Shepherd and Sarace and saying to yourself, okay, if Gavin or Ethan has a season-ending injury or one of them decides to transfer, do we feel comfortable with one of those two guys as our number two or and number three quarterback or not? Because otherwise, then you got your work cut out in the summer with looking for another quarterback as well, which I don't think they want to do.
Yeah, and, you know, someone actually asked a question about that from our last podcast, and I realized that maybe I should have gone into it a little bit more when we were talking. But I actually don't think, like, I even if it's obvious, I feel like they're not going to name a starter after the spring to avoid, you know, anyone transferring out. It's also when spring camp ends, it's like right before the transfer portal deadline to enter. So I think I actually even wonder if like starting spring camp at this time is, you know, that's a little strategic in that regard too. Not even just for quarterback, but for overall. But yeah, I think the whole goal is to get, you know, everyone competing going into August into training camp. But I agree with what you were saying about letting it open up a little bit. But I do think that it's going to be much more about getting the system, you know, really implemented well, getting all the quarterbacks. So you essentially have, I mean, you have two new quarterbacks. You have a guy coming back for his second year who played limited action, and then a guy that, you know, has been in the system now for a full year, but needs to take a real step forward. So I think they're really going to hone in on the basics is probably the wrong, but the core part of
principles the offense. Yeah, their core competencies of what they need to do. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, you know, because I think ultimately, they in recruiting these guys and having some of these guys under, you know, their umbrella already, they have an idea of kind of their, you know, skill sets or, you know, potential in certain things. But I think it's ultimately going to come down to how proficient are they in those core competencies within the system. And that's probably going to be the differentiator. Because I think no matter what, like we know Gavin probably has the higher ceiling just in terms of a pure arm standpoint, his ability to run. But does that necessarily matter if they determine that Kalik Manis can just run the system better? He's more efficient. He's more accurate. Like that to me seems like how they're, you know, where they're going to lean if that is actually the case.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about this before as well, which is you really need to do. I mean, we talked about this in every podcast in some way, which is like self-scouting. And how do you do that? You got to put them in situations and see what happens, because ultimately you could come out in the first game and your opponent is going all dime in terms of their defensive strategy. And you have to say to yourself, all right, do we just have our quarterback start putting his head down and plowing, vice versa? Now, 3 weeks later, a team could come out and say, all right, we are playing a 44, like old school, like 8 men in the box, maybe 5 down linemen, maybe a 53 front, something like that. We dare you to throw it downfield. And so you've got to know who you trust in those situations, as well as, okay, what of our core concepts will we run in that situation? Like, is there a seam route that is fundamental to what they do? Like, in, we talk about in the air raid, you have to be able to throw a shallow cross. If you can't throw a shallow cross accurately, you can't play in an air raid system, period. Because if you can't do that, nothing else is going to – everything is built on top of the being able to do that. So, like, where are those concepts for Kirk Soraka in the 2024 playbook? Who can do it? Who can execute it? And then if – depending on how a defense comes out at you, you know, what do you do? I don't like a two-quarterback system, but they've talked about Soraka and Shiano have said, we have to be able to beat teams with the run or the pass. And so – who gives you the best opportunity to do that? Now, I don't think you have to decide that, like you said, at the end of spring camp, but it's important to have a good idea as a coaching staff of what you think the answers to some of those questions are. And, you know, we talk like when we say core concepts, like we say basics kind of makes it sounds negative, but it's like if the 6 yard hitch route to a tight end is an integral part of your offense, that is like a hot route against the blitz, a lot of the time, like that's what we're talking about. It's not necessarily like, you know, who can tie their shoes. This is literally like, what are the throws that are most important that our offense is built around? And so that's really where you want to see that. But then the coaches are also going to have to throw some wrinkles in at these guys and see how they handle it. But I do think, to your point, there's a lot of ways that this could go. There's a lot of ways the starting battle could go. Probably only two guys really looking for that. But after that, it's like, who's your number two quarterback? There's a good chance any of the four could be your number two quarterback, for sure. I think there's probably only two guys battling for the starting job right now. But, I mean, I'm really interested to see how this breaks out. And for everyone that, you know, speculates, it's like the coaches need to win. I mean, this is college. You don't get a better draft pick for losing. Like, they need to put they will put the best guy out there because they need to win. And, you know, again, I think the team's going to be better than they were last year, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win more games.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And, yeah, I mean, going back to the core, it's what plays do they need to execute during the season to be able to be successful and to win. And I think that's really where they're going to be looking at in the spring camp, and I think in the scrimmage situations, putting the quarterbacks in different spots, different situations to see how they handle it, and obviously just how, you know, other guys around them develop. I mean, there's still a ton of questions on offense. Obviously, you have Manungai back at running back, which is a blessing for many reasons. But wanted to wrap it up in terms of any final thoughts you have either on what came out today or just moving forward, what people should listen for or look for as we, you know, go through these 15 practices spread over 5 weeks, culminating in the Scarlet-White game on Saturday, April 27th.
I guess the main thing from having had to take a best guess as to what the coaches were alluding to in so many of these press conferences, obviously try not to read too much into it, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't look. Right. We if when you hear certain things, I mean, I don't expect them to say, hey, we're going to run, a 34 front on the defense. But, you know, if you start hearing about maybe an extra defensive lineman getting extra reps who you would have thought might be in the interior, like maybe we need to keep our ears open. And, you know, those type of tidbits are quite interesting. At the flip side, I think even if you might see the same tinkering on defense as they're doing on offense, but it's more just to keep everybody interested and motivated. Like that's really an important thing, you know, in terms of like the Kenny Fletcher, like if a guy's not making an impact as like a huge defensive end, like really wreaking havoc, after a certain point, it does make sense to try him at tight end. Like he's big, see what he can do. The Crumpler thing also you mentioned, that's good news for me because I was concerned he might not be fast enough to play receiver, but if they're moving him to corner or safety, then clearly he's fast enough to do that, right? If you're not fast enough to play receiver, you're not fast enough to play corner. That's just not how it works. So that's an encouraging news as well. I guess the main thing is just for football, less is more at this time of year, even as we start spring practice. Like, you don't want to be team turmoil. Now's the time to be team, like, steady and consistency. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to Thursday's pro day just to see what kind of numbers come out of that. Sometimes it's interesting to see, you know, was a guy faster than we thought, or was a guy bigger than we thought and maybe underutilized or maybe injured. You know, sometimes you get the Tim Wright situation where you're like, I can't believe he's that big and that fast. And then he does well in the NFL and you're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Or, you know, sometimes it's really interesting to see those type of things. I hope Jaquay Jackson is a full participant, because I really think that he was underutilized. And if true, then, you know, that's not a blemish on the staff per se from last year, because I think they used him like they could. But that's an area where maybe a changing quarterback play or improved quarterback play can get more out of the receivers. And then, you know, that's a positive. So, again, sometimes pro day is kind of good news. It's usually a good news, bad news situation, because if anyone's that good, they wouldn't even be participating and they'd be a surefire first-round draft pick.
Yeah, well, and with Jackson, too, you know, he was banged up last year, so I think that was part of it also. But, yeah, pro day is always fun to track and see how guys are doing. And perform and set themselves up for the draft in April. I think the last thing I want to end on is in terms of, you know, I think you said team turmoil. It's obvious, but and it's, you know, pretty, it's not groundbreaking, I mean, but they got to stay healthy. They have to avoid injuries from key guys during the spring that could really impact this team in the fall. So I think you bubble wrap Menungai. You bubble wrap a couple other guys, you know, in particular, Teray be one of them as well, and Flip Dixon. Yeah. Those guys have to be full goes and ready to go at the start of the season. You know, so I think that was just an eye opener a little bit with Powell, and hopefully he obviously does recover in time. But I think, you know, key injuries, avoiding those in the spring is huge, as much as development and all that is. You want your two deep as secure as possible with so many starters coming back. We'll have plenty more of these during spring camp and football updates as they come here at the Scarlet Faithful podcast. David Anderson, thanks so much for coming back, and we will talk to you soon.